In the United States, the official designation of Hispanic Heritage Month covers late September and early October, and it's a good time to review some of the struggle and success of Hispanic actors and filmmakers over the last century. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Hispanic Heritage Month has just ended, and today we'll have a look at some of that heritage as it relates to representation and access in the U.S. movie industry. Joining me to discuss Hispanics and Latinx contributions and struggles in cinema, I'm happy to have frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado on the show today. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, Chuck.
I should also mention you're occasionally a guest host of this show, so thank you for filling in from time to time when I need a break. This is a huge subject, and it's one of those strange months that actually begins latter half of September and goes into the first half of October, but we've just wrapped it up. I was curious, as a jumping off point, maybe looking back at the last century before we get into more contemporary films and what's going on in the last few decades in Hollywood, but growing up, I know you're a film buff, I know you love watching movies. Could you think of any classic period actors, directors that were Hispanic or Mexican-American or Latinx?
Honestly, not really. Kind of my experience with golden age era films are, predominantly kind of white faces and white stories. It wasn't until, weirdly enough, it was a contemporary film that sort of opened the door to older films. And for me, it was, there was a mid-90s film called A Walk in the Clouds. In that movie, Anthony Quinn has a little supporting role in it, and it's just a warm little performance. And the more that I sort of got into film, I discovered who Anthony Quinn was. He was this great Mexican-American actor. He's had a string of great performances. And I ended up kind of working my way backwards from there. So it's interesting, when I sort of think of the golden era of films, the representation just wasn't there for me, but they're sort of sprinkled throughout, and Quinn for me is one of them.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Anthony Quinn, because he's one of the big ones I thought of. And in fact, he was just born down the road here in Chihuahua, Antonio Rudolfo Oaxaca Quinn, obviously went by Anthony Quinn, often portraying exotics. And in Hollywood speak, that meant he often was an Arab, a Greek, occasionally Mexican. And there is one film I wanted to point out to people that they might look down, since we're all sitting at home streaming stuff, but that has an El Paso connection. And that's Tom Lee's book, The Brave Bulls, that was made into a film in 1951 that Anthony Quinn actually is one of the stars of, along with Mel Ferrer, who was half Cuban, by the way. So another Hispanic actor. And it was mostly shot in Mexico, which is really unusual for 1951. And the depiction of bullfights and Mexican culture is fairly straight down the middle. It's a deviation from what most of the classic period have. When you saw Mexicans, they were usually bandidos. They were extremely marginalized characters in the film, oftentimes white actors in brown face. So that's all part of the legacy of Golden Age Hollywood.
So just to piggyback off of one of the points that you made, one of the interesting things is that, as we move into these contemporary films, one thing that you sort of notice is that these are stories that tell positive stories, but sometimes they fall into stereotypical roles. I think the big twist between, the Golden Age films that had the stereotypes and these kind of current ones is that these are stories that are being written by Hispanics and directed by Hispanics.
Big difference, big distinction. And I can think of no Hispanic directors or producers from the Golden Age. And I think you've brought up a really important point. That's a good segue to, I was in discussing the show with you and what we might talk about, I was reminded of a study last year that came out from the USC Annenberg and NALIP, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers. They sampled 1,200 U.S. films over the last decade and found that only 4.5% of them were Latinos in those speaking roles, compared to over 18% of the population, and that only 3% of them had producers who were Latinos and 4% directors. And of the directors, only one of them was a woman. Still a huge challenge, but you really hit on it for me is I like to look for the Hispanic directors and writers, because oftentimes the stories are different and they are backfilling with a lot of other people with Spanish surnames in the cast and credits. So I know you've prepared some thoughts on some movies we might all check out or a good viewing list?
And, you know, I think a good entry point when we're talking about, you know, Hispanic writers and directors, I think the first name that should come to a lot of people's minds is Gregory Nava. I think he might be known to mainstream audiences. Oh, yeah. Same here. And you would think that the first film that we would associate with him is Selena, and rightfully so. Selena is a great film. That's a solid biopic on her, on the singer Selena. But my Gregory Nava film that I chose is actually My Family. It's from 1995. It stars Jimmy Smits, Edward James Olmos, and a young Jennifer Lopez. And it's a very nice kind of quiet film. It's a time-hopping drama that kind of shows a family story as a man immigrates from Mexico to California in the 20s. And it basically details his family's struggles in the coming decades. And it, again, it's just one of those quiet, independent films. And what I like about it is the way that, depending on what mood you come into it when you start it, you're either going to find it, you know, incredibly heartwarming, and you'll find it funny and heartbreaking sometimes in the same scene, or criticism of it is that you might find it kind of over dramatized and a little bit trite. Personally, I don't feel that way. I think Nava has a very good handle of the subject matter and the characters, and the cast does a very good job of filling out the roles quite well.
Well, Do You Want Better for Gregory Nava? It's a few years before that, 1983, his film El Norte, which was really powerful, and it feels like nothing has changed. He could have made this film today. It's basically the first third of the film is set in Guatemala with a brother and sister who are of Mayan descendant, and how the culture there is really abusing them. And they finally decide to make the trek to America, to the promised land. And the middle third of the film is their journey from Guatemala through Mexico and the difficulties of that journey, and then being smuggled into the U.S. and being captured and returned to Mexico because the Border Patrol thinks they're Mexican, not Guatemalan. And then the last third of the film is then a second attempt to get into the U.S. and find jobs and begin to get some roots there. It's a very humanistic look at the plight of these migrants, and given all of the talk the last few years of Guatemalans crossing Mexico to get to the U.S., I can't suggest El Norte strong enough. Also by Gregory Nava, very important director. What else do you have? I know that the last few decades have seen a steady rise, albeit not on parity with other ethnic groups behind the camera.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of parody, this next film that I was introduced to, I ended up coming to it through an episode of South Park. There was an episode where Eric Cartman ended up parodying Edward James Olmos' character in Stand and Deliver. So I ended up checking out the film, and again, it's Edward James Olmos doing his best Edward James Olmos. He got nominated for an Oscar for this performance, and it's one of the new wave films from the mid to late 80s directed by Hispanics that sort of dives into the lives of its characters. And in this film, Olmos, he plays a calculus teacher, and this is based off of a real man, Jaime Escalante. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not an earth-shattering film, but it's just a very powerful performance by this one great actor and these strong supporting characters.
With positive representation of people of color on screen.
Yes.
That USC study that mentioned that only one Latina had directed a film in their 1,200 films they surveyed. That Latina was Patricia Reagan, who made my list. She made a wonderful film in 2007 called Under the Same Moon. It actually had a few scenes shot here in El Paso. And this is about a young boy who's left behind in Mexico with his grandmother, and it has a conversation each week with his mother, who's come to the U.S. as, I think, a domestic in Los Angeles, undocumented. And his longing for her leads him to travel on his own. He takes his own journey as a young boy to be smuggled into the U.S., to have to move along with strangers and try to find her in Los Angeles. And Under the Same Moon is kind of a nod to one of the things they discuss on their telephone calls, is that they both can look up, him in Mexico and her in Los Angeles, and see the same moon. And that's what connects them. It's a beautiful film. America Ferrera has a small part in that film early on. So Patricia Reagan and 2007's Under the Same Moon.
So speaking of America Ferrera and female filmmakers, on my list is Real Women Have Curves.
Of course.
It's a 2002 film. It was directed by Patricia Cardoso. Mm-hmm. It stars America Ferrera and Lupe Ontiveros, El Paso and Lupe Ontiveros. It's based on the play of the same name by Josefina Lopez. And it's basically, it sort of tells that almost universal struggle that children of Hispanic families feel when they sort of have to weigh their familial struggles with their own personal desires. And I think the powerful thing about that film is that even though it's very specific to this family, and these characters and these sort of cultural ties, ultimately, it's still a very universal film because, you know, what people haven't felt that struggle with their family?
I have one last one that I think almost nobody saw when it came out in 2009, La Mission. And this was starring Benjamin Bratt. He plays a really tough ex-con who's in the neighborhood, very respected in the Mission District of San Francisco. He builds lowriders as a hobby, but, you know, he's tattooed. He's a very macho Latino, and he's raising a son on his own. His wife has died. And he finds out that his son is gay, and it's also about his son as a Latino young man coming to terms with what that means, and also the cultural challenges to Benjamin Bratt's character and all of the machismo that he's grown up and uses as a shield in his life, and whether he's going to accept his son. I thought of that maybe because this last week we also had National Coming Out Day, and this is a nice blending of Hispanic Heritage Month and National Coming Out Day, but a wonderful family drama that is set culturally specific environment, and that is La Mission from 2009.
So I have one more film, and this one I feel like I need to contextualize it because it's just a little bit of a cheat. You know, originally when you and I were pitching this show, we were considering doing a horror list, a Halloween list, and we decided to do this instead. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to the box office returns in the COVID era, but a re-release has taken over, and it's Hocus Pocus.
Right.
And the reason I'm bringing up Hocus Pocus, and the reason that I think it's worthy of looking at it, you know, in addition to it being a Halloween film, is that it's directed by Kenny Ortega. You know, he's a Hispanic director. He's carved out a nice little career for himself in theater and in film and television. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, a Hispanic director directing a film that when it came out in 1993, it was basically cast aside. And as we all know, it's become a cult classic. And there is something to be said about a film striking this sort of chord with everybody. And to this day, it's still, you know, referenced and celebrated. And now it's at the top of the box office.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Halloween because I wanted to remind people that George Romero, one of the early great 60s independent filmmakers who made Night of the Living Dead, was the son of Spanish and Cuban parents. And George Romero reinvented the horror film with Night of the Living Dead, and he had a 50-year career based around zombie movies and others. But George Romero's out there, lest we forget. And I think as a jumping off point, I could say go watch Coco with your kids. One of the biggest budget, fully Latino, culturally appropriate, also about cultural appropriation and intellectual property. It's a fascinating film, and Disney took a big swing and I think really did a great job with Coco. So, but there's a lot of good stuff to watch. Thank you for helping us spotlight some of those titles. Maybe our listeners being at home through COVID can make a viewing list out of this. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Chuck.
I've been discussing some film history and recommended titles that dovetail with Hispanic Heritage Month with frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. For a list of the films we've discussed and for an archive of past programs, log on to the On Film Archive at ktep.org. On Film was edited by Seth Van Meter. I'm Charles Horak. Stay safe, wear your mask, keep your distance, and thank you for listening to On Film.